Hi everyone, this is the second season, seventh episode of the Pedal Podcast, and I have Tom Bergqvist with me, who's a Swedish entrepreneur, and we're staying on the Swedish line for these two episodes, and he is coming with a totally different concept than what we usually spoke about. He is running an executive search agency for many years now, back in his home in Sweden, which is supporting life science industry in recruitment. He is a former tennis amateur. He found paddle in 2016 and has been playing like 3-4 days a week since then. And his son, David, is also a paddle coach. So they have been coming up with an idea, which is to create a paddle resort, which is called Paddle Šolta. We will talk a lot more about it. It is in Croatia, and it is actually an alternative to Spain, where most of the people go. It will open in May, and their concept is quite unique on the market. They are offering a relaxing and familiar atmosphere, living together with all other guests, as well as their staff, who is at the same time their host, their paddle coach, their travel guide, and holiday companion. It is also quite fun because they're having a lot of activities, excursions, yada, 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 to just experience Šolta, which is not that well of a known island in Croatia, but it's really, really close to Hvar and Brač, which are a lot better known. So these are the things which you have to know about Paddle Šolta. He tells us a lot more about his beginnings, how he came about in paddle, why he loves the sport, why he really wanted to get into the sport. And it has been fun as always. What can I say? I'm really, really privileged to have all these amazing people on my podcast. Please do have a listen, and you know, just the usual things. Give me a like, give me a subscribe, come here, there, and everywhere, and just check out the Pedal Podcast. As I say, you know, it does mean a lot to me, and just enjoy. Thank you. Hi everyone, this is the second season's seventh episode of the Pedal Podcast, and we're staying with the Swedish influence of Pedal. I've got Tom Bergqvist with me, and he's got a really, really exciting project, which he will talk about, but also I want to really get into the thing that how did he get into Pedal and why Pedal and all that. He received my 10 questions, the magical 10 questions, and hopefully... He also said that he prepared himself for this, so I almost feel like I'm a principal of a school that I'm sending out questions, or at least the teacher. But Tom, thank you very much for accepting my invite. How are you? How's the weather treating you? Where are you now?
Thanks, Dennis. Nice to be here and part of your podcast. I'm very good, actually. I am in Split in Croatia at the moment. So normally I'm based in Sweden, but we're here to follow some of the final steps of the construction. That is, we're still waiting for the resort to open up in just a month or so. And as being here, it's... spring is coming, actually. So yesterday we had some 17, 18 degrees, and going home to Sweden later today, it will be like 2 degrees again. So yeah. It's great.
Yeah, I mean, Croatia is one of my favorite places. I've been to Croatia 10 plus times because I'm Hungarian, so I'm from Budapest originally. And for us, Croatia is the closest sea. So for us, it's great that we can go there. I absolutely love the cuisine there. Croatia will play a big part of our podcast this time. I'm not going to go into a lot of details because you will. But yeah, I envy you that now you're in the sun, because I know that Split is an absolutely amazing place. And okay. So first real question, because obviously, you know, the small talk is one thing, but the question itself is, how did you actually get into pedal?
Yeah, I think it was like 7 years ago, in 2017. We are a tennis family. I have three kids, and they all play tennis. Apart from the little guy, he was crying on the tennis court, so he must play football instead. But So we played a lot of tennis. I grew up actually with a court on our property in our summer house. We had a court, tennis court. So when we saw padel started to come in Sweden, there were not many courts, but we tried, and then we fell in love with the sports, I guess. So, and my son started to work as a host in a padel center. Later, he became coach and all that.
Okay. Do you play paddle, I assume?
Yeah, actually, I try to play now. Last couple of months, I played like 4 times, 4 days a week, actually.
Okay. Now that's
So,
interesting because I will
yeah.
ask a lot of paddle questions today. I mean, one thing is that we are talking on a paddle podcast, but I'm always intrigued to know what people's levels are and what racket they're using, what side they're preferring, and that sort of thing. So, whereabouts in Sweden are you from originally?
From Gothenburg.
Okay.
So we live in Göteborg, and yeah.
And how's the situation in Sweden in general in terms of like paddle and how's Gothenburg? How big is paddle in Gothenburg? And you know if you can compare like Stockholm, Malmö, Gothenburg,
Yeah,
all
yeah.
these, because I know that there's over 7,000 courts in Sweden, so there's quite a few courts, and we've heard about quite a bit of closing
Yeah.
of the courts and all that. But yeah, so how's the general situation of paddling in
I
Sweden?
mean, as you say, there are many, many problems now. I mean, it grows so fast. It came in the pandemic, when we had the corona, and the funny thing, many things were closed, but for some reason, the paddle centers were not closed. So it was like a free zone for people to get together and play. Probably not very good because you were sometimes infected and all that. But then paddle grew a lot, and still, they say paddle is growing in Sweden, but that is a number of licensed players. So, I mean, the everyday paddle for the normal person is not so much anymore. So that's why probably some paddle centers, they must close. And to be honest, I live in a small place just outside Göteborg, next to Göteborg, and they built 4 paddle center in that small area. So I was thinking the number 4 who built, I don't know what he or she was thinking actually, because there are not so many people. So now 3 of them has closed, so it's only 1 left.
Wow. Yeah,
So,
that doesn't that sounds like a bit of an overkill, to be fair. I mean, I live in
yeah.
Bristol in the UK, which is like the paddle hub of the UK, and we've got 4 centers, and all 4 are usually fully booked. So it's great to see that, you know, many people use it. But we are talking about, what's the population of Gothenburg?
In Gothenburg, in total, we have some, say, 500,000 approximately.
Okay, so sort of Bristol size. I
Yeah.
guess there's so many courts there because here we've got over 30, I think 32 courts maybe, but I guess in Gothenburg it has to be over 100 for that
I
amount.
think we had some, at the most, we had probably some 30 paddle centers around
Wow.
very in the big Gothenburg. So it was. But they are, some of them are closing down, and I think it's much better for the ones now. And but I still, I think Sweden is number 2 in the world in paddle courts, I think,
Yeah,
maybe after Spain.
I don't know about Argentina. I'm not 100% sure about
No.
the Argentinian numbers, but I'm pretty sure like Spain is obviously leading with over 20,000 courts, 22,000 courts, if I'm not mistaken. And obviously Italy is now doing really well. Italy is, I think, third or fourth, depending on Argentina. I don't have the exact numbers of Argentina, but I know that for a fact that in Europe, Sweden is second. And Italy is third. So, and it's not Portugal because many people would assume that it's Portugal, but you know, the population, and that's the weird part of it, because Sweden's population is around 10 million. And why do you need 7,000 courts? I mean, look, I think you do need that many courts, but not everyone. It's still a new sport. So that's the thing. Like I know that Sweden obviously treated the COVID situation differently. There weren't any lockdowns, there weren't much There were things they did, and I think it was for the best. I have to say that obviously the economy didn't really suffer from COVID, which is great. And I know that people could play paddle, which for me is one of the weirdest things because paddle is pretty much full on. You've got a partner because you kind of play
Yeah,
singles,
exactly.
and you're in a cage. So, you know, it's sort of like condensed as well. So I don't really get why people couldn't really play tennis, but they played paddle. So I don't really get it, but you know, who am I to judge, right?
No, we don't know either. It's strange, but to be honest, also I know many paddle centers were built in Sweden just because they could earn quite a lot of money. It was still at the time quite expensive to play for an hour, and we saw some really strong profits for some of the paddle centers in the big cities, and everyone thought maybe they could earn a bit as well. So they couldn't see the problems, what would happen if people play less and people don't have so much spare time and all that.
Yeah, it's a strange one. It really is, because the Swedish model was different from everyone else and everything else, because they built 30, 40 courts in one center, which sort of kills the vibe. I had Christopher Granfeldt in my last episode, who's also Swedish, and you must know him because the instant paddle. And he was saying, and we were talking about it, and I think it's quite a fascinating thing to talk about Sweden in that perspective, that everyone wanted to get in on the act. And I think that's the same thing which is happening in the UK. Maybe the government or like the local councils weren't as strict as in the UK, because in the UK it's really tough to build courts unless you've got the permits, you've got everything. But you've got so many, you know, like abandoned aircraft hangars and all that sort of thing in Sweden, that it was fairly easy, because obviously for paddle you need quite significant height, because obviously the clubs are really, really high, and you know, it's like you need at least 6 meters, but you're supposed to have at least 8, I would possibly say. But you know it better, because we're gonna get to paddle Salta as well. But I think it's quite an interesting one that the Swedish just sort of all of a sudden demolished tennis courts and put paddle courts on them. So look, I'm the same as what you said about your family. I'm from a tennis background. I've been playing tennis since I was 4 years old. I grew up you know, watching Edberg. I grew up watching these guys, and I'm just saying Edberg, but you know, I was a massive Sampras fan. But for me, it's still a bit of a shock to see that, okay, why do you actually need 7,000 courts? You possibly don't need 7,000 courts. You might need, you know, I don't know, 5,000, but that's 2,000 overkills. So yeah, no, I get it. And to be fair, it's an interesting one that I've heard that, yeah, a lot of centers are closing down, and because of that, the ones who survive are actually flourishing. So that's great to hear and great to see. And I know that now the Swedish players, there might, I think, if I'm not mistaken, there is guys who are in the top 100 or close to the top 100 of the FIP rankings. So the Swedish paddle is really, really kicking off.
Yeah, it is for sure.
Sorry, carry on.
Yeah, but in Sweden, as in Sweden, everyone in the top segment players in Sweden, they all come from tennis, so they have a tennis background. They have been really good tennis players, but now we see that it comes a new generation. We have a few players, two predominantly, who is very strong in the junior national team, and they're both playing on the senior Swedish tour as well, and they don't come from the tennis, and you can see it. They will grow even more. They will become even better than our best players today, I would say. So I mean, if you are from tennis, it will take some time to get rid of all your tennis things.
Yeah, I mean,
So
interestingly enough, the top Spanish players, quite a few of them are from a tennis background as well. But I assume even with the tennis background, padel has been around for 20 plus years in Spain. So, they might have been really high level tennis players who also played padel. So they already have that sort of, so it's a bit of a cheat, I would say, when they say, let's say Gemma Triay is from a tennis background. Yeah, I guess she is. So she has great shots, but in the meantime, she also grew up playing padel. Maybe not
Yeah,
at the
probably.
level as what she played as tennis player. Jose Maria is another example. Those are the two ladies who I usually bring up because I know that possibly Paquito has, Bella might have tennis background, and all these guys do have a tennis background, but when they have a tennis background and they also grew up playing padel, it's just different. But I do see your point. The only thing what I've seen is the guys who come not from a tennis but from a padel background, their defense is absolutely amazing. Like what they can get out from the back walls, the side walls, how they hit the posts and all that is absolutely amazing. The only thing which I've seen they struggle with usually is the big kick smash. Because that's such a tennis shot, because of the kick serve, what we hit, it's a lot easier for us to actually go for it. And they do struggle with it. But they have so many different things which they can utilize, like the Viboras, the Bandejas, all that is that's why I think it might be easier for them in the long term to just learn one shot, and we have to learn 16 different shots. So I do see your point, what you mean. Okay, tell me about Padel Solta, Scholta, I would possibly think, because there's an accent on the first on
Exactly.
S, so I'm pretty sure it's Scholta, but I'm not 100% sure. So you will clarify. So what is Padel Solta or Scholta? What's your vision, and what do we need to know? Because obviously that's how we ended up in this podcast.
So you're right. It's called Scholta or something like that with the accent over the S. So what it is, it's a we always say it's a paddle resort. It sounds always so fancy in my ears to say a resort, but okay, it's quite fancy, but the paddle resort concept is that you have everything on the property. You don't have to leave the property actually because you have the courts. We have two paddle courts. You have a large kind of infinity pool. You have an outdoor kitchen, barbecue, and bar. And you have two houses for the guests. So everything in about 2,500 square meters. So in some way, it's unique. You should never say something is unique because there are probably other places quite similar. But you know, normally people they go to Spain to play for a weekend or so, and then normally you stay at a hotel. It can be a luxury hotel if you want, or it can be quite a budget, a cheap one. And then you walk to the paddle courts and you hire a coach and you play and you go home or you go out to eat and everything. But here is the thing here is that you all live together. We have a coach there who is your personal coach, but he's also your host, your guide, your personal driver on the island, taking care of you. And we can arrange for everything like transfer, breakfast, lunch, barbecue, wine tasting, if you want to add some extras as well.
Okay, who's your court provider? So what courts did you plan there?
It was from actually for many years ago. I contacted when we started the project. This was like 4 years ago that when we bought the property and then designed the houses and the. So I contacted quite quickly a few different suppliers, but the best one for me was a Swedish guy actually. He runs this company. It's called Padel Total. Padel Total, and he has a factory in the in Spain, of course, as everyone else. He built probably most of the padel courts in Sweden, so he's been building lots of courts in Sweden. So we decided to partner with him, and actually we did a change quite recently because we decided to buy used courts. So the structure has been in Sweden before, actually, outdoor courts in Sweden because they are better treated against rust and so on. I've learned they have a, they are bar, they have a zinc bar. They are galvanized, of course, but also they are treated with zinc in some way to prevent the rust. So he has taken down those courts in the southern parts of Sweden, and they will be sent together with new surface, of course, new grass, some other extra things like protection net around the courts and so on.
Okay, you said two courts, and I do believe so. How many guests will Petal sold? I'm just gonna go with the S now. So I think it might be easier than to say the Esh, which I don't. I really don't mind because actually, in my name there is one. I mean, my original name is not Dennis, but whatever. So I will go with the Sulta. So, how many guests are you expecting each time? Because obviously, if there's two courts, there's a maximum of like eight possible guests. Or how will that work?
Quite often it will be eight guests, and it could also be 12. So I think the ideal group for the group trips would be 8 to 12 people, but we can host 14. So someone can also rent the resort for own use. You can rent it for a week during the summer, because July and August is very hot, and maybe we don't arrange trips. So then you can rent it for own use. Then you can be three families or a large group of friends, and playing whenever you want.
And there won't be any canopy over it, so it will be outdoor court. There is.
It will be outdoor, with no canopies yet. It might be in the future. We'll see what will happen, because it takes away part of the experience. But maybe we can prolong the season. Also, we can use the course more in July, August, when it's very hot. So we'll see what will happen
Yeah, I
going
mean, you know,
forward.
the canopy on those parts of the world where the summer is quite cruel, it might also give you a bit of shade. So that's also quite nice. But I haven't actually thought about it, to be fair. But I know it's not necessarily the rain because there's not a lot of rain in Croatia. I mean, there is, but not sort of the summer months. And I guess it will be seasonal because it's in the winter, it can also get quite cold, you know, plus it's still, but no one really wants to play outdoors unless they're British in like 5 degrees. The British love to go out in the wet, cold, windy conditions. They just absolutely love it. That's why I know that I'm not British. So yeah, and whereabouts in Croatia is Petal Solta?
Well, it's I'm in Split now, and the actually Salta is the closest island to Split. So it's just you can, if you stand on Riva, the promenade in Split, you see Salta just ahead of you. So there are daily ferries like six times a day. You can also bring your car actually to the island. So it's just beside more well-known island of Brač. Most people know about Brač, and they know about Hvar for sure, but most people haven't heard about Salta actually. So it's pretty much unknown among foreign tourists. Quite a lot of local domestic tourists coming there, and that's what I like about the island as well. It's kind of picturesque, and I've been to Hvar a few times. It's a lot of people, prices are high everywhere, and food is maybe not the best during the season in the common spots, of at least. But Salta is more, there are not so many hotels, and that is why probably.
Okay. Why did you choose Croatia?
Yeah, that's people always ask me that, and because I don't know many words in Croatian, I have no connection whatsoever actually. But I have been in Croatia really much over the years, both as a in holidays and so, but also in training camps for many times. I've been here training. That wasn't in tennis actually. I used to compete quite a lot in athletics as well, and then we quite often went to Split for 2 weeks in the spring. So I was here the first time in 1984 when it was still Yugoslavia actually. So Then I had a girlfriend whose father was Croatian, and he had a house on Istria, in Istria, in the northern part of Croatia. So when I was there a couple of years ago, probably 5 years ago now, I just fell in love with Croatia, and I felt we should do something here. And the idea was firstly to create kind of a private holiday place and maybe build one court. But then when we found this place, it was like a property with old stone ruins on the very top of the island, overlooking the sea, overlooking Split on the mainland. And then we decided to go a bit harder in the project to build two paddle courts to create this business with the paddle trips and all that.
Okay, yeah, I mean, Croatia is a really interesting place, and as I say, I'm obviously biased with it because we went there, we had a holiday, we almost go every year, to the Istria actually. We
Yeah,
usually go
yeah.
to Opatija, which is picturesque, almost. It feels like it's Budapest, but with the sea. So that's why we love it. Because you've got great food, great atmosphere, great hotels. So what not to like. And I can 100% see why you actually chose Croatia. But for my listeners who tend to be mostly British, and when we when I talk about like different places, I was lucky enough to go to Croatia, but not a lot of British went to Croatia because it's usually not a holiday destination which you would think would be one of the main attractions, but that will definitely help. Are you planning some sort of cooperation with, I don't know, let's say the paddle school, with the Farquharson brothers, or will are
We work today since a couple of months with creating quite strong partnerships with different I mean, it could be, of course, different paddle centers and all that who want to arrange a trip for their players, but also with some really good coaches running some camps. For instance, our first camp this year will be by the end of June with Tasty Paddle, Gabo Loredo, maybe you know them. They do lots of camps in Europe, actually in Sweden. I don't know about UK yet, but they have been in the Netherlands, Belgium, Germany, Finland, Norway, Sweden many times.
And when are you planning opening Pedal Sholta?
We open up by the end of May, I would say. We have a startup in end of May for a daily event, actually. Someone coming with a group, and we want to pick them up at the port. We take them to the resort and coach them for 2 hours, and then we eat and we have some drinks, and then we take them back to their boat and they are off again. So that is really the kickstart of the resort. And then in June we have some bookings, and this Tasty Camp will be kind of the real opening, because we have guests coming from the UK, from Germany, from Belgium, from Sweden, and actually all the way from Dubai. We have two people coming from Dubai to join this camp.
Wow. Yeah, I
So
know
it's
it's massive in
amazing.
Dubai. And it's the Middle East is quite an interesting place because obviously playing outdoors all year in the 30 plus is quite demanding. But I know that like in the winter months when it's maybe a little bit better and a little bit more doable. But definitely they do have the money, and I can see why. For example, one of my favorite cuisine, as I said, it is Croatian. So the Croatian grill food is something amazing. What's your favorite Croatian dish?
I would say, I mean, actually, I started to enjoy so much the mussels, traditional mussels. They call it here Busara style. In Dalmatia, it's normally based on white wine and garlic, parsley, and they are so great when they are fresh mussels from the island, for instance.
Oh yeah,
That would be my
100%.
favorite.
Yeah, no, I can understand why. Yeah, absolutely. And how's the situation of paddle in Croatia? So obviously you've chosen Croatia because of partly personal reasons, and obviously as a resort, you can put it anywhere in the world because people will fly in for the
Yeah.
experience. But how is the situation? Because I know that there's actually there was one of my friends who played with a Croatian guy in a tournament in Transylvania as well as in Budapest, and he's a force, so he's one of the best players in Croatia. But in general, how is it compared to, like, you know, the, I would possibly say, just middle, if you know, the sort of the mid Europe situation, and how many courts are there? What do you know about Croatian padel?
Yeah, it's still not so many courts. I don't know the numbers, but we had a meeting just a few weeks ago with the president of the Croatian Paddle Federation. Really great guy, and he's so excited about growing paddle in Croatia, and also someone in a paddle center here in Split. So, for instance, in Split, which is the second largest city of Croatia, I think about 150,000, maybe not so much, around 150,000 people. There are only two paddle centers today, so it's just about. But they are really heavily booked all the time. I think they have nine courts, these two paddle centers total, and only one of them has indoor possibility, two courts or maybe three courts inside as well. There will be new paddle centers, new courts coming up, and the players, they're coming up in a quite good level as well. Croatia is quite a good, strong tennis nation as well. So the best players in Croatia, for sure, they are from tennis as well. And I think they have a national team that is they are coming quite well, and they will get better for every year now.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at the coaching, I think that's one of the most important bits because, look, all of us can hit a good volley, right? So it's not about that. It's not about, like, how we can hold our side on the court, but it's quite interesting the evolution of a tennis player coming into paddle, and I actually felt it on my own skin how it is. How different it is once you actually realize that, okay, so paddle is a totally different sport from tennis. Like it's almost like squash and tennis, for example, that you do play with a ball and a racket, but it's totally different what you need to look at, what you need to be really aware of, and all that. And I think that's what the Spanish can really do, and that's why you need a lot of coaching, and that's why I hope that Croatia's weather isn't that dissimilar to Spain. Maybe it's a little bit colder in like the, you know, the southern parts as like southern Spain, but in general, like mid Croatia is pretty much the same as mid Spain. So, I mean, but the thing is that everyone needs indoor facilities because otherwise it will be really tough to play regularly. And even in Spain, even in Madrid, in Barcelona, in Malaga, they do have the indoor centers because obviously one thing is to learn how to play with the wind, with the sun, with all that, but they do need indoor centers to really, really get it going.
Yeah, for sure.
Next question. Are you planning on build, like, obviously now you're just starting and that was a massive project, but are you ambitious to build a few more, maybe in Croatia, in a different place? What's your vision? What's your plans in the next 5 to 10 years?
Yeah, I think there won't be any new resorts on another location, but the next step for sure will be to buy some land on Sholta. To build first an apartment house nearby, because then we can host more guests as well, and maybe trying to raise two new courts as well, because we have some questions already for groups that are too big to handle for us. And I mean, when we start up and the interest is growing, we sure need somewhere else to live because we cannot live on the resort ourselves because there are too many guests probably. So we have to have a known place nearby and maybe combine it with two additional courts.
Okay,
So that
that's
would be
interesting.
the plan going forward. And I mean, we have from start, we had the ambition was to have Scandinavian guests. You can ask me why, but that's because I'm a Scandinavian guy. But then we quite quickly realized the interest is so strong from other countries in Europe. So today we network and connect with people from mostly outside of Scandinavia, actually. And the good thing, they have more direct flights. They have a longer season of direct flights from other countries than Sweden and Norway, Denmark, for instance. So we approach the European market, and also we have seen that there is an interest for different things. It could be a corporate conferences and things like that. We didn't think about that at all. We were only focusing on paddle group, paddle trips, but now we have scheduled a few business conferences after the summer. We have these camps. We will have some daily events. So we have broadened the offer for Parisholta very much. And also my son, who is a paddle coach, he decided that he will approach the local school, and we will have them coming once a week from school to learn how to play paddle. They don't have to pay anything, so we will show to the kids what is paddle. For them on the island, it's totally new. They never heard about it probably. So hopefully someone will get excited and maybe working with us in the future and start playing.
Oh yeah, and I mean, it's first of all, it's a lovely idea. Second of all, it's such an exciting time for paddle at the moment. I always talk with all of my guests. We always mention this, that it is great that now paddle is really growing and it can be seen. And when you said that, like you thought that the Swedish will possibly go, and you said Scandinavia, but I'm just sort of focusing on Sweden. But I think a lot of them are now tired and fed up with paddle, so maybe that's why they don't really want to go to a sunny place and play paddle. Look, I would 100% do that. So I wouldn't mind. I would travel the world with paddle. So for me, it's different. But there you are. Are you planning to come to the summit, the paddle summit in Malaga?
Yeah, I would love to. I'm sure I should be there, but it is exactly the same days as we start up with this daily event and the opening up. So the timing was really not the best this time. We partner, as you may know, with Philip Pereira. I think he was in your pod as well recently. He's a kind of ambassador for the Paddle Summit, I know, and also he helps us in some marketing communication strategies. And so I would be happy to be there, but not this year, I'm afraid.
Oh, maybe next year. There's always a next
I
year,
hope.
isn't there?
Yeah, I hope.
Okay, so tell me about your paddle then. So you said that you play 4 times a week. You like there was a time when you played 4 times a week. Your son is a paddle coach. What's your racket?
Yes, we have a Swedish brand called Vidar of Båstad. You know, Båstad is a tennis mecca of Sweden. And the brand is called Vidar of Båstad, not so well known outside Sweden, but quite strong in Sweden. Many girls play with it. It's a bit lighter, so it's very popular among girls. And maybe I'm not so strong and I don't need such a heavy racket. So I also like Vida. We partner with them as well and sell some of their rackets.
Okay, really interesting, because I think it is something which people don't really realize how big the Swedish market is. Because we talk about obviously the courts and everything, and there's what like there's as we talked about it, there's so many things going on. I was really intrigued to try the Cyberschafe of Stiga, which is also a Swedish brand, and they came up with this idea of the Cyberschafe, which isn't around face. It's more like an octagon, or I think whatever. I think it is an octagon, and the shape of it. And look, they have made amazing success in table tennis, and now they are trying to do that in tennis. And also now they came up with new the cyber shape in padel. So it will be interesting. The best Swedish player, as far as I know, is actually sponsored by Stiga. So it is interesting. It is an interesting one. But you know, there's so many. I actually met a guy who's doing Donne and Oxdog, and Oxdog is also Swedish, as far as I know. And Schlesinger actually has the Schlesinger paddle is a Swedish distributor or bought, like they bought into the Schlesinger. So people don't really realize how massive, how humongous paddle in Sweden is. And obviously, you know, we only hear the bad things about like centers closing down and whatnot, but paddle thanks people's attention, but it is going well and it is alive and well in Sweden. So it is quite interesting, and I'm quite intrigued to see the rackets on what you mentioned, because I'm a bit of a gear geek. So for me, it would be quite interesting to try those rackets, to be fair. So I like that. So where did your son, how did he end up with paddle coaching, and how, where did he learn? Did he go to Spain to it, or he could actually like learn the basics in Sweden? How did that go?
He was like he was competing quite a lot in tennis, and when we found padel together when he was like only 16 years old, I think. So he started to work in the second padel center in Göteborg. There was only one at the time, so this was number two, and he was one of the first employed, like, you know, extra in the weekends and so on, since he was only turning 17 the year. And then he continued there, and then they needed some extra coach. So he had first some coaching from the paddle center. It was quite a decent tennis player who ran that center, Johan Brunström. He was a double tennis player for many years on the tour. So, and then they brought, he didn't go to Spain, but they brought a coach. They had a partnership with the M3 Paddle Academy in Spain. So they sent coaches to Sweden to train all the staff. So he was taking part of that and also some other national training sessions. But going forward, we have planned to send him also to Spain for a week. Probably this April, he will be 1 week in Spain, in Madrid, to be coached as a coach from really experienced paddle coaches there.
Yeah, when you said the M3, obviously the best players on the planet do practice. I mean, at least some of them do practice in the M3, so that there's not a lot of better places where you can actually go and learn paddle than from the best. So that's great. Which side are you playing at?
The funny thing is, I'm quite often a forehand player because my partners, they think I don't have the big smash and all that, so I don't take the backhand. But with my son, he's a left-handed, so he puts me always in the backhand side. So, and to be honest, I feel better in the backhand side. So, but playing with him, I mean, he take two-thirds of the court with his forehand in the middle, so it's easier playing with him, of course.
Nah, they're 100%. Is he competing?
No, unfortunately not. He did a few small like tournaments with different, but he's studying full time last year now at the university and working some extra, so taking like 2 days a week as a paddle coach as well in the evening. So unfortunately, he hasn't got the time to for the competing.
Yeah, I see that. Okay, last question, because we are almost at the end of our time, and I know that you said this slot, and I tried to fit everything into this slot. How do you see paddle evolving in the next 5, 10 years? How do you see? Obviously, you have the Swedish model, and it's quite intriguing to know your input on that one. But what does paddle need to do? A, to get into the Olympics. B, to be one of the major sports across Europe. not just in Argentina and Spain. How do you, it's just your opinion, but I'm quite intrigued to know on what how you see this.
I think it would be necessary for, I mean, as I said, in Sweden, there were some quite business interests running the growth of the paddle, and we see it somewhere else as well. But I think it must be more balanced growth. It's growing so much, but and how can you do it? You can do it by involving the young players, kids, to start with more of a club feeling. It's still not like tennis, because tennis clubs, they are for kids, they have groups. It's not so common yet in padel, so it must come to the young players, the kind of club feelings. And I think a good thing in Sweden, and I heard also in the UK, and you know more than me, but many like tennis centers, like racket centers, they add on a few padel courts as well. And they already have a tradition of bringing kids there, starting competitions and all that. So that, I think we will see much more of that in all Europe, closely connected to other racket clubs, and finding the young people to train in a club and so on.
Yeah, I mean, I think what we need, I always go back to that quote and I almost say it almost every time on the podcast. I had Emma Kimber from the Bandeja magazine, which is one of the main magazines in the UK, in Padel. There's two. One is the Bandeja, the other one is the Padel paper. And Emma said that she was the third. I think she was the third episode on my podcast, and she said, and I always go back to that quote, is that we need more of everything. And I think it applies not just for the UK, but it applies for Europe as well, because at the moment there's not a junior team in the UK in padel, because there's not enough junior players. There's not a junior team in Hungary, where I'm from. And that's a shame. And more guys actually going there. But the thing is accessibility, I think, is that's the issue still. Not necessarily in Sweden, but when you said that it's still expensive in Sweden, everything is expensive in Sweden. Don't mind, paddle. But I think until that happens, and I think it's a great idea that you will make paddle accessible for the kids in Schulte. Which is just an amazing idea, and I cannot emphasize it enough that such a good thing that you're doing that
Thanks.
is what we need to do. That's what we need to do. Everyone needs to get in on it. Everyone needs to put their effort into it. And that's what we need. So, as a closing thought, that's what I will say, that I think we really need to make a concentrated effort to make paddle accessible for everyone. Tom, I wish Padel Schulte all the best. I wish you personally all the best as well. I hope we can see each other in person, and I hope we can have a game.
Thank you very much. I hope so too. Then you can try the Vida racket on Schalter, maybe. We will have it for try there.
Yeah, that sounds great. That sounds great. So yeah, I mean, I'm always open to the idea to go to places, and I'm just really happy that people are coming up with new ideas. So Tom, thank you very much. I really,
Thank you
really
very much,
appreciate your
Dennis.
time,
Okay, bye.
and I hope to see you soon.
You too. Thanks, bye.